Good evening. Certainly good to have everybody out tonight. We're going to be in Luke chapter 12, beginning in verse 21 tonight. The title of the lesson is Overcoming Anxiety. This morning we talked about Luke chapter 12, and we talked about the successful man who had a great crop, and he needed to build bigger barns and store that up, and his only mistake was that he was going to retire from God. That he had enough money for many years to live well, and God wasn't in his thinking. Well, we go from the successful person to the person who lacks everything, who's worried about the basic necessities of life, that they can have the same problem the rich guy has, that you don't think about God because of the problems you have. And so in verse 21 through 23, he said, don't be anxious. 21, so is the man who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. You need a relationship with God, whether you're rich or whether you're poor. The rich have temptations the poor don't have. The poor have problems the rich don't have. You need a relationship with God, so there's a balance. Verse 22, and he said to his disciples, for this reason I say to you, do not be anxious for your life as to what you shall eat, nor for your body as what you shall put on. For life is more than food, and the body than clothing. I mean, when you have problems, you think the immediate problem is all there is to life. You forget your eternal. You forget that you need a relationship with God. And it's more than just food and clothing. No matter how poor you are, how much trouble you're in, life is bigger than that. You need a relationship with God. He talks about do not be anxious. In Luke chapter 8, verse 14, you know, he's talking about the parable of sower, and the seed falls among the thorns as it's sown. And what does that mean? 8:14, and the seed which fell among the thorns, these are the ones who've heard. And as they go on their way, they are choked with worries and riches and pleasures of this life and bring no fruit to maturity. People can receive the word and hear it, embrace it, but just simple problems in life choke them. Choke out their ability to produce fruit for God. Pleasures, riches do the same thing. Matthew chapter 13, verse 22, he makes a different twist that the worries choke out the word of God from being able to do its work. So he says, don't be anxious. Just listen to me. Don't do it. You know, you come down to the second point, God's capabilities. Luke chapter 12, verse 24 through 28. Lots of lessons in this short verses. And you need to consider God's capabilities when you have problems. Usually you're looking at yours only, you know, and you realize real quick that you're coming up a way short. That's why you're worrying. That's why you're fretting, and anxiety rules. Verse 24, consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, and they have no storeroom nor barn, and yet God feeds them. How much more valuable are you than the birds? Realizing your value to God overcomes anxiety. When you have anxiety, you think you're all alone. You think there is no help. And you've lost focus on God. But you said, look at the birds of the air. You know, they don't sow. They don't have the capability of planting something and then reaping it and then storing it. They don't have no barns. Yet they get by. I drive through the back roads in the country every week, and there's birds everywhere on the road. They're eating something down there. But they all got to scurry when I come along. But they're just millions and billions and trillions of birds. And God feeds every one of them. He's capable. I was going home last Wednesday, and there's four baby raccoons and a mama raccoon by the side of the road eating something. No, they're not carnivores, but what? The babies didn't run. Mama run, which is smart. But God's feeding what? This morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, I'm coming out of the back way of Perry there and on gravel road, and two big buck come roaring out of that cornfield. I mean, huge. I don't know what they're eating in there, but God was feeding them too. And you're much more valuable than all them animals. So, you know, you need to take confidence when troubles come. verse 25, and which of you, by being anxious, can add a single cubit to life's span? I mean, what's worrying going to do for you? You're not getting one more moment just because you're fretting about whether or not you're going to starve to death today. No, that timetable's still ticking, and it's still being determined by God. And so by being anxious, you're not adding one thing that's good to your life. In fact, you're destroying it, you know, and so worrying is useless to solving the problem. All it is aggravation. All it produces instability. You're now less capable of dealing with your problem because you're now gone off somewhere deep in your thinking. It's not even real. Verse 26, if then you cannot do even a very little thing, why are you anxious about other matters? If you can't add another day, a moment to your life, you're going to solve other problems. Do you understand how limited you and I are? When we're young, you don't think that. But you know what's still true? Yeah, there are bigger things out here that you can't do anything about. I mean, a loved one passed away suddenly, there's not one thing you're going to do about that. I mean, there's so many things you don't realize when you're younger. When you're older, you become much more aware of them because you're moving toward that end of the spectrum. We said, if then you cannot do it even a very little thing, why are you anxious about other matters? So it's obviously, you know, we're inadequate and we're limited. Verse 27, consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, but I tell you, even Solomon, in all his glory, did not clothe himself like one of these. He said, look at the lilies, the beautiful lilies, and they're blooming, they're beautiful. He said, take a good look. They don't toil and they don't spin. I mean, they don't go out there and shear the sheep. They don't have a wife to spin it in some clothes. And yet, Solomon, the great wisdom, the great rich man, he couldn't do as good a job as God can do in making something beautiful, clothing something. With great glory, God can always do a better job, is the point. Verse 28, but if God so arrays the grass in the field, which is alive to tomorrow, and tomorrow is thrown in the furnace, how much more will he clothe you, O men of little faith? I mean, the time frame of the grass, you know, they're out there cutting that hay. They'll be cutting it hay again this fall winter time. Yeah, it don't have much. And here you and I can live to be 100, 100 plus. There's a great deal of difference between hay and you and me. And when God takes care of them, he works that out. People get, cows got something to eat. I mean, wheat's grown. We get something to eat. God's taking care of that the whole time. And what about clothing you and me? What's the problem really when you have anxiety? It's a faith problem. It's faith in God. It's a lack of faith in God. He says at the end of 28, O men of little faith. And so, you know, verse 29 through 31, what do you need to seek when you're anxious? Verse 29, and do not seek what you shall eat or what you shall drink, and do not keep worrying. For all these things the nations of the world eagerly seek, but your Father knows that you need these things. When you worry, you forget about God, and He knows what you need. If you're one of his children, he cares and he knows. So that's not where the problem is. The problem is we're overwhelmed with the fear of where this is going without God, because God's not even thinking at the moment. But you know, he says, verse 29, do not seek what you eat and what you should drink, and do not keep worrying. For all these things the nations of the world eagerly seek. And he adds a epi to the pronoun seek there. The Gentiles are out there, they are eagerly seeking how to get by in difficult times because they don't have a backup. They don't have nobody that cares about them unless there's some close family that's got some surplus. They don't have God. And so they're frantically looking for answers as if there is no God. You and I just look around at the birds of the field and lilies of all the flowers, and we know there's a God. You can see in nature that there is a God. Well, if you have a relationship with Him, you know, you don't need to be frantic in seeking for answers. What you need is Psalms 46, verse 10, cease striving and know that I am God. Sometimes that's all you can do, is stop and settle down and realize God is God, and He's still going to be God, whether you acknowledge it or not at the moment. But learn to cease striving. It don't sound right, but it allows you to get your bearings, to get your focus back. And anxiety is just going to drift away with the wind. Verse, what do you need to seek? Verse 31, but seek for His kingdom, and these things shall be added to you. Matthew 6:33 expounds on that. But seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. I mean, you put forth effort to let God rule in your life. That's what kingdom means. You and Him have an understanding at that moment. Who else is down here saying, I want the Lord to rule in my life? Oh, I want Him to help me because I'm in trouble. And then you can go on, Lord. You've done your duty. Go on, like a servant. No, Matthew says, seek first His kingdom and His righteousness. If you're going to seek God first, then you've got to do it His way. And then all these things are added to you. You don't need to worry about them. They're coming. Can you be patient long enough and not add to the problem before the solution comes? Is the question. Well, you look at Psalms 37. And in Psalms 37, it is a chapter about not fretting. You know, and it's about fretting over evildoers and you know, what people do and why you need a relationship with the Lord. He says in verse 7, Psalms 37, verse 7, rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. I mean, instead of being worried and losing all your energy and strength and compounded with fears and hopelessness, rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who carries out wicked schemes. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil doing. I mean, you get irrational. You say things. You do things. You wish you could have never said. But it always leads to something. You're hurt lashing out. Verse 9, the evildoers will be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord, they'll inherit the land. I mean, when God takes the wicked away and He don't take you, that means you're part of the righteous. And it means you can work any part of the land out here you want to work. It's wide open now. Well, that's what this Psalms is about. You know, you come on down to verse 23. The steps of a man are established by the Lord, and he delights in his way. I mean, you allow God to direct your steps, to establish them, to give them roots, and you follow that path, the Lord delights in you. I mean, showing respect, showing humility, letting the Lord direct, and guess what? It's going to benefit you. Verse 24, when he falls, he shall not fall headlong. Now, we're going to have trials, we're going to have temptations, we're going to have problems in life. But when you fall, you don't fall where you can't get back up, because someone's protecting you along the line. The middle of verse 24, because the Lord is the one who holds his hand. And so there is the Lord in the midst of troubles. When you're falling and about to do something really bad, there's a helper, helping hand there. Verse 25, David says this, I've been young and now I'm old, yet have not seen the righteous forsaken or his descendants begging bread. Old man. He was young once. And David lived a life of just turmoil and people trying to kill him. And he died an old man. Despite everybody trying to do him wrong, the Lord delivered him every time. And he says, you know what, the one thing I've noticed, that the righteous and their descendants, you don't find them begging bread. You find other people begging, but no, the Lord's taking care of them. And that's an awful, awesome statement from experience of a number of years, how the Lord does take care of His and His descendants. That, you know, you can be a crook. You can come from people who are crooks, and your kids can be crooks, and then they can, you know, and you can't tell who hasn't been in prison, who has, how long. And it started back here with somebody in the gene pool. Or you can have a righteous grandmother. Husband becomes righteous. The kid offspring become righteous. Their offspring become righteous and they're blessed. And in times of trouble, there's the Lord looking out for them. I mean, what effect does people have as time goes on? Just trying to be righteous, or I don't need the Lord. I love anxiety. I love fretting. You know, nobody loves that, but what? We wring our hands as if there's no solutions lots of times. When Jesus says, don't be anxious. I mean, look around. God's taking care of all the birds, and He's clothing all the flowers, and you're more valuable than them, and He can do a better job. I think I depend on the Lord. You know, it was a lesson learned than depend on myself when I'm in trouble. Because that, as you know, and I both know, we've made a lot of mistakes, and we've made a lot more mistakes when things were bad. And we should have learned something from it. I mean, Jesus is about to be put to death on a cross and be separated from God. God's going to make Him to be sin. I mean, wasn't anything about anxiety. It's about absolute fear of being separated from God. Knowing that's going to be His reality. And He's going to cry out, my God, why hast Thou forsaken me? I mean, thrown into that world, thrown into Hades as He dies. But Acts chapter 2, He will not be abandoned to Hades. David wrote that down in Psalms 16. There's God. Him trusting, depending on God, dying as a sinner. Even though he hasn't sinned, he's been made to be sin, 2 Corinthians 5. And you know, it worked out real well for him. And you and I are following in his footsteps. He's the author of faith. He's the one who knows how to deal with difficulties on earth. He was born into a family who was poor, who offered up doves as sacrifices. God didn't bring him into a middle class family. Rich family. He knew what it was to barely get by. He understands where you and I are at. And so, God raised him from the dead. Oh, that changed everything. People could be forgiven of their sins. They could have a relationship with God without any barriers between them. All their sins could be remembered no more. Mercy could be shown in abundance. Saul of Tarsus said he was the worst of sinners. Ananias came to him 3 days after he'd been blinded and asked him, you know, why did he delay? Arise and be baptized and wash away your sins, calling on his name. The opportunity for the worst person in the world to find your sins washed away and God look at you as pure and holy. I think there's no barriers between you and God. The only barrier is whether or not we let anxiety and problems take our eyes off the Lord. You need to respond anyway. Won't you come as we stand and sing?